Welcome to Some Cast It Hot, a podcast dedicated to film. This podcast is hosted by Allison from Nerd Vampire, Alex from Film Forager, and Sasha from The Final Girl Project. In this episode, the girls review House, a 1977 Japanese film, which, according to IMDb, featured severed heads, sexual denial, watermelons, and kung fu. We also share some of our favorite So Bad It's Good recommendations in honor of House. So, sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, this is Allison from Some Cast It Hot, and we're back.
Yay! Oh my god!
Yeah, it's been long enough. And then, you know, shit. It's been a while.
It's already explicit, thanks. Yay.
We've gotta earn that warning somehow.
I noticed that all of our podcast episodes have that warning on them. I never noticed that before. Like, do we cut that much?
I think I added them just because I keep on swearing, so.
That's fine. I think it makes it more hardcore.
All right, let's get started. And to begin with, kind of sad news. Unfortunately, Caitlin won't be joining us as on the podcast anymore due to her work situation, but she's going to remain an avid listener.
Hi, Caitlin.
Hi, Caitlin.
Hey,
we love you, and we hope you're doing well. Let's, okay, so let's begin with the last movies we've watched.
Allison, you want to go first?
Yeah, sure. I just need to remember what the last movie I watched was. Oh, I watched Heart and Souls.
Oh my god, I love that movie!
Yeah,
I've never seen that movie.
Oh, it's so good. Sorry, go on, Allison.
It's got Robert Downey Jr. in it, and the plot is when his mom was giving birth, she was kind of in the car on the same street as this big bus accident where 5 people were killed. And there's
five, because
the bus driver.
Yeah,
right.
Sorry.
And you've got, I don't remember any of the characters' names right now, so I'm sorry about that. But there's, you know, Alex can help me out here. I know there's Keir Cedric's character, who that night she was on the bus to try and catch up with her fiancé. And then there was this guy who wanted to be an opera singer, but he...
Oh, Charles Grodin?
Yeah, Charles.
Love him.
But he chickened out at his audition, so he just got on the bus, I think, last. And then there was the mother, this cool African-American lady who had to go to work that night.
It's Alfred Woodward.
Yeah.
Exactly. Sorry, I'm not sure how to pronounce your name, but I like her.
Yeah, I just feel bad because I can't remember any of the characters besides Robert Downey Jr. is Tommy.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was the thief.
And Tom Sizemore, I think, is the actor.
Yeah. His character was Milo. Right.
Yes, Milo.
So they all become connected to Tommy when he's a baby, and they kind of have what looks like a 15-foot... They can't, like, get away from him. And they're ghosts. And at first they think it's all great, and they can kind of help raise Tommy, except he's the only one who can see them, and eventually he gets in trouble for these imaginary friends. So they disappear for a while, and they only come back when he's like in his early 30s, and the bus driver is like, well, I'm here to take you to heaven now, or to be reborn. Have you figured out what you were supposed to do on Earth yet? And of course none of them know, because nothing got explained to them. So they have something like 2 days to try and work everything out before they are taken away. And they have to reveal themselves to Tommy all over again. He's like, hallucinations. But it's just such a cute movie. Like, it's so sweet. And then Robert Downey Jr. has to do all these impressions because all the ghosts at one point or another have to possess him so that they can fulfill their what they left behind on Earth. So
that's hilarious.
Yeah, like he crashes
a
B.B. King concert so that the opera singer can perform in front of people. And then
he has to steal back stamps. Which is cool because that's really Robert Downey Jr. singing.
Yeah.
Like, I love when he sings in his movies because he is a singer, but he doesn't do it too often.
Oh, I forgot he was a singer. I thought maybe they were dubbing him over at the moment because his voice changes slightly. But yeah, his voice doesn't really change when he's possessed, does it? So.
Not really. Because he sings in a couple, in like the movie Kisses Bang Bang, the song played over the credits is his song.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And obviously the singing detective, like the one musical he's done. I'm like really into Robert Downey Jr. Let's name all his movies.
What year is this movie?
93, 94?
Yeah, it's early 90s.
Yeah.
I think it's still on Netflix Instant Watch, but part of the reason why I was watching it is it's expiring pretty soon. Mm-hmm. So maybe check for that.
Your Instant Watch is not the same as my
Sorry, I didn't know how the rates work. I just assumed that, because I know you guys only get Instant on Netflix.
Yeah. But we just got it, so I don't feel that bad that we don't get as much as you guys do, but... Well, I have it if you want to borrow it, Sasha.
So yeah, there's Heart and Souls. It was really cute. Y'all should watch it. And Alex has already watched it, so...
But I agree with everything you say.
Yay.
So, great job. Okay, so the last movie I watched, I'm actually pretty excited to talk about. It fits into today's theme, I think, pretty well. It's not actually, I don't think it's actually a bad movie. It might be the best movie ever made. We'll see. It's called Going Ape! ! And it's from 1981. And it stars Tony Danza. Has anyone seen it?
No.
Okay, well, be ready. All right. And it's on, we found it on Netflix Instant, like last night. We just wanted to watch something that was like, sort of fun. Oh, and we just read about this movie because it's Tony Danza playing opposite three orangutans, and that's the movie. And just Walter's in it, the mom in Arrested Development. It is so good. Tony Danza is this guy who is like, his dad was in a circus and he dies. And so he, is like bestowing all of his money to all the circus people. And his son, like Tony Danza, like left the circus. And so the dad always was mad at him, but he... As an act of, like, forgiveness, he gives his son his most prized possessions, which are these three orangutans. But, like, there's this weird thing in the will where if one of them dies within a span of a few years or something, one of the orangutans dies, then all of the money that, Tony Danza was supposed to get goes to the, like, Zoological Society. And it turns out the people at the Zoological Society are, like, evil, maniacal. And so they plot to, like, kill the orangutans. So the entire movie is Tony Danza hanging out with the orangutans in his apartment. A really, really nice apartment in L.A. It's very spacious. Even though he doesn't have a job. And Danny DeVito, who plays this acrobat of undetermined ethnic origin. I'm going to say... Eastern European or Russian or Italian or a combination of...
Wait. Danny DeVito's playing an acrobat?
Yeah. The movie starts off with him, like, walking across a high wire. Have a joke, yeah. And he's one of the keepers of the orangutans, I think. Like, he's there to, like, help him out. And he just sort of, like, doesn't really speak that much English and, like, just sort of makes up a language, we think. I'm pretty sure he wasn't speaking a real language. We couldn't figure out where he was from. And then Tony Danza's girlfriend, who is mad that he's, like, favoring... Because the orangutans get jealous of her, so she has to, like, move out. And he's trying to reestablish their relationship. And her mom is Jessica Walter, who, like, kind of helps them out. And then these, like... The, like, Zoological Society hires these, like, Italian mafia stereotypes, like, stupid grunts, one of whom looks just like John Turturro, to kill an orangutan. So it's, like, three guys... like, dressing up as painters and trying to sneak around, and there's all these hijinks. It's a very hijink-filled movie. And they're trying to kill the orangutan, but they always get foiled somehow, usually by one of the orangutans. And then the people in charge of the Zoological Society are finally like, fine, we'll do, and it's, like, a stodgy British guy, and he, like, dresses as a cop. But then there's all this, like, misinformation and confusion, and then there's, like, someone backstabs them because they want the orangutan, too. Everyone's trying to get these orangutans, and Tony Danza's like, oh, no. And, it's awesome. It's really awesome. And orangutan gives someone the finger, and Tony Danza, like, does karate at one point. I can't say enough good things. Everything I think about this movie is the best thing ever. It's so good. Everyone should see it. Going Ape. Oh, and it's directed and written. It's an auteur picture by the same guy who did the Clint Eastwood movies with the monkey. Every Which Way But Loose and Any Which Way You Can. Famous Clint Eastwood and a monkey. Those movies are awesome, too. So it's clearly his, like, forte is this kind of movie. A dude and a monkey. So just watch it. Like, I'm not even kidding. Like, it sounds like, oh, the movie is, like, it's bad. But, like, it's legitimately a really, really funny movie because it's so ridiculous.
I think I was sold at the Danny DeVito as an acrobat.
Yeah, that's pretty. Oh, also, I got to add to my list of people you wouldn't think had made out with one another, includes Danny DeVito and Jessica Walter.
Oh God!
Yeah, I know. Think about that for a while.
Oh God!
He had to stand on a high. He was like standing on like a pile of something, and she was standing on the floor, and that's how their like heads were the same height. And she was dressed as a nun at the time. Spoiler alert.
Okay, well, the last movie I watched was The Fighter, but I don't really want to talk about it. So, I watched about the whole first season of Being Human this week, and it's at the BBC version. Have you guys seen that yet?
I've seen a couple of episodes, but I haven't been consistent with it.
Yeah, Alex?
No, I'd like to. I was reading a review, but it sounds really cool. I just haven't gotten around to watching it.
Yeah, so basically, Being Human is a vampire, a ghost, and a werewolf live together in an apartment. And I could tell you more about it, but I'm exhausted.
Is it more like a comedy or a drama, or is it both?
Well, the one that's on Space and Sci-Fi, I find that it's more of a comedy. But there are, like, a lot of dramatic elements to it, but there's lots of one-liners, and Sam Huntington's in it, and he's just hilarious as the werewolf. But the BBC one is very depressing.
Yeah, I think what I saw of the BBC one, just in terms of plot, was the vampire worked at the hospital.
The vampire and the werewolf, they're orderlies at the hospital. And, of course, the ghost doesn't have a job because she can't leave the house.
Right.
So it's about the ghost's relationship with her fiancé, who can't see her, and then the werewolf coming to terms with how he became a werewolf, and then the vampire is dealing with his maker, because his maker wants him to come back into the fold and start killing people again. But on the Space and Sci-Fi version, the vampire's maker is Mark Pellegrino from Lost.
So the whole
he's Jacob. I don't know if you guys got that far.
Oh, no, don't worry.
Yeah. But the whole time I'm like, oh my God, it's Jacob. Oh my God.
I definitely want to watch it. I just need to finish like 10 other shows first.
I know.
I'm still getting through Doctor Who, so.
Oh, how's that going, by the way?
I'm so slow. I took a long break between season 2 and season 3, but now I'm, like, back in, and I don't remember what episode I'm on, but I'm coming at the end of season 3. Like, I have maybe 4 episodes left. I'm trying to remember what happened. He gave Martha the key to the TARDIS, I remember that. Oh, they were in space, and they were going to crash into the sun. That was the last episode I watched. Sorry.
So you're like, they were in space? I'm like, yes, Alex.
That just happened. And, like, the mom is in contact with some shady people, I don't know if they're Torchwood, who are trying to, like, find out where the doctor is and, I don't know, do bad things. I don't know.
Season 3 has a really good season finale.
So,
stick with it, because it's worth it.
Yeah, I mean, it's been kind of hit and miss. I liked Martha, but I don't love her.
That's how I feel about Martha.
And the writing hasn't been as, like, good, I don't think. But I still like it, you know.
That's the season without the Steve Moffat two-parter, isn't it? They only do the one with the Weeping Angels.
Not all Moffats are two-parters.
Right, but that, I think first season and second season both had two-parters, and then this is the one where you only have that one episode. But I don't know, I just watched it like a couple months ago, so I could be wrong.
I think it's season one and season four, there are two-parters. The Empty Child and The Silence in the Library.
Right.
And then season two is Girl in the Fireplace, and then season three is Blink.
Well, wasn't the episode with Madame de Pompadour a two-parter? Or am I just making shit up?
No.
Oh, it's just a one-one. Okay. Ooh, it's time for House.
No, excuse me, everyone. Rule. The only way you can say the name of this movie is House. Whenever I write it, I have to write it all in caps lock because I'm imagining it being said in my head. House.
I had to start writing it as Houseu because I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going to watch House tonight. And they're like, what do you mean, the doctor show? And I'm like, no.
It's much cooler. I have less British people. Do you have a plot summary, Allison?
I was kind of hoping you'd give one.
I can read the one that I wrote, if that's easier.
Yes.
Okay. A group of fun-loving Japanese schoolgirls plan to spend their summer at a beautiful, isolated mansion. But after experiencing paranormal activity, they come to realize the house itself may want them dead. Their mysterious wheelchair-bound hostess seems to have a nefarious fate in mind for her guests, but the girls are oblivious to the warning signs. Their actual mutton chop teacher is en route to the house, but may not make it in time to save them, and indeed has no idea they're even in danger. That makes it sound like such a normal movie. But yeah, that's the basic plot, is that a bunch of girls are in a house, and it tries to kill them. But they have, like, yeah, because they're so stupid.
They all have stupid nicknames.
Okay, wait. What are all their names? Gorgeous?
Gorgeous, Fancy. Yeah.
Mac, because she likes to eat. Because she's a fat one, apparently, just like the rest of them. Melody.
Oh wait, Mac because of stomach, apparently.
Oh, I thought it was Mac like McDonald's.
Yeah, that's what I thought,
too. I thought it was mac and cheese.
There are many, many versions. Melody plays piano. Sweet has no defining characteristic other than being nice. And the best character ever, Kung Fu.
Oh, yeah,
oh, Kung Fu is so cool.
Ever. Everyone's favorite character. I love Kung Fu. I think that's it, right? The glasses one. Prof.
One of my favorite parts of the movie is when, like, we're 20 minutes into the film. We've already met all these characters. They go to school together. We have the story. And they're walking through the woods. And all of a sudden, music plays. And there's, like, freeze frames on all their faces as we introduce each character.
I laugh so hard at that.
Well, you know what it is?
It's got the frame around the screen.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a little circular frame. Like, it's like the credits to it, like a kid's TV show. But I think what it is the guy who made the movie, Obayashi, he was a commercial director, and this is his first film, his first feature-length film.
Oh.
Yeah, like, well, he used to make, like, art films, like, weird, like, experimental art films with, like, Yoko Ono in the 60s. and then he did commercials, and then he made this movie, which was supposed to be, like, a midnight horror movie, like, shown, you know, at, like, as a double feature. And so I feel like if you know that and you watch the film, a lot of parts of the movie feel like a toothpaste ad. Do you want to, like, go around and say how great this movie is? Sure.
I think you should just, like, start talking and we can add in our points.
I don't feel like dominate the conversation just because I love this movie so much.
Yeah, but that might be good because you love it so much.
You are the expert.
Basically, okay, this movie. I saw it, I think, in May or April. I saw it before everyone else was talking about it, everyone, FYI.
Oh.
I'm not, like, being a hipster here. But, yeah, it was cool. It wasn't available in the U.S. for a while, and it's kind of like a rediscovered movie because it's from 1977. And they were doing a tour of it where they were bringing it to theaters and screening it. There was, like, one print. And so I got to see it then, which was really cool. And then I saw it again at a 12-hour horror marathon. And it started the thon, which is really nice, too. It's a great movie to see with an audience. It's still screening in theaters. Like, I know they're showing it again in Boston, or they just did. So I definitely recommend anyone who can see it in theaters should. Did you guys just watch it on DVD?
Yeah, I just bought the Criterion of it.
Yeah, which came out in September, which is really cool. It's got a lot of cool, like, extras and whatnot.
I mean, it's fun to watch no matter what, but I guess I think it's really good, like, with a group. Like, this is the kind of movie I want to show to people, and I want to have, like, you know, a goofy sleepover with, like, 10 people watching it, you know. Let me see. I don't even know how to begin talking about this movie. There's, like, it's so weird. It can't be described. There's no other movie like this. I think that's a fact. It's not even that it's bad and good. It's just weird and good, I think. I don't know. Do you guys think it's, like, a bad movie?
It's hard to say. I can't really tell. I just finished it, like, what, 4 hours ago?
I mean, I was entertained by it. So, and usually when I think about bad movies, there's always that boring part where I'm like, fuck, I don't care anymore.
Did you have that, like, boring moments with this? Or it was, like...
No, I had no boring moments, because every time I'm like, okay, this is weird. When are they going to realize that there's something going on? Because, of course, it's always fantasy who is starting to see the she sees the head in the well.
Yeah.
And they're all like, well, it's just fantasy. She probably just made it up. Or, you know, she's seeing things or whatever.
I love how oblivious they are. They spend so much of the movie, like, all of her friends are being killed off. Oh, well, let's go eat dinner, or let's go put on makeup.
Yeah. The whole time I'm just like, come on. God.
Like, I kind of think that makes it better, because there's, like, every scene has something kind of weird going on, something new, something seemingly irrelevant. You know, there are all these moments that are never referenced. No one talks about them. They don't come back later. And it's, I remember when I first saw it, the guy introducing the film saying, like, okay, you know, it's a Japanese film and it's subbed, but honestly, I don't think having subtitles helps you understand the story at all. And I would kind of agree with that. Doesn't make any sense. Man, let's think of, I want to, like, get across how great and weird this movie is, so I think one of the best ways to do that is to talk about how people die. Okay, Mac gets her head chopped off. What happens to Mac? Because her head gets in the well where they store the watermelon, and when they pull it up, it's a head instead of a watermelon.
Well, we don't really see her death, because she just sort of wanders off to get the watermelon, and then fantasy goes after her, and she sees the head in the well.
A floating head that turns like spider.
And then they're eating the watermelon, and there's that creepy eye scene.
I love that scene, yeah.
That scene's really good, but it's creepy as all get out.
Kung Fu gets attacked by Wood at one point, and her, like, clothes fly off while she's fighting them. I love Kung Fu. She doesn't die, but that's, like, a thing that attacks her. What's her name gets the mattresses attack her, and she turns into a doll.
Sweet. Yeah.
Is that Sweet? Yeah, she's, like, cleaning or something, right? And all of a sudden, like, the mattresses just, like, wail on her.
Yeah, she
loses all of her clothes, and her friends find all of her clothes, and it's pretty funny.
This is the clothes in this movie. Because that happens to Prof, too, at the very end.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you're right. She falls into the water, and then her clothes magically disappear.
In the blood water.
In the blood water. With the cat.
Oh, my God, I love that cat, yeah. I actually know what that's called. That is based on Japanese folklore, and it is called... Oh, give me a second. I'm looking at my... A kaibyo, which is a half-feline, half-demon who can switch between cat and human bodies. Because that's kind of like... I think... It's supposed to be that the woman who is, like, the aunt, that's their hostess, the old woman, is actually, like, she's taken over by this cat demon. So it's, like, the cat and the woman are kind of the same person.
Right. Well, there's that, she does have, like, certain characteristics where she acts like a cat at one moment, and then she'll switch back to being in the wheelchair or wherever. Like, she goes into the fridge at one point, and then she pops up on the roof, and she's sort of posed like a cat.
You're right. I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
I don't remember that at all.
It's okay. This movie has so many little small moments that you might not even notice. Yeah, I feel like it definitely benefits from rewatching. I mean, if it's like your kind of thing, like, I don't know if you guys liked it quite as much as I did, but it's got, like, a lot. Like, one of my favorite parts of this movie is actually the part where the cat is, there's that melody that goes throughout the whole film that the instrumental tune that they play over and over again, which, if I recall correctly, is actually the composer of that, is the guy who sells the watermelons, the Laffy guy.
Oh, okay.
He's the composer. And he's the one in the trailer who does the house, like, that's his voice.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that.
Hey, I got the trivia, man.
Hey.
A lot of research for this movie. But yeah, so that song plays throughout. And there's one part where it reminds me so much of, like, a YouTube video. Because it's just the cat is, like, on the piano. And it's sort of like, it's almost like a stop motion thing where he's, like, playing the music.
Oh,
and then you
right.
hear meow, meow, meow. Like, he meows the tune.
There's a lot of...
You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
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 There's a lot of weird stop motion in this movie, actually, and they're all doing it with the actual human characters, or the cat.
Yeah, yeah, like, I love that scene with the piano where it eats her. It's amazing. And that's, like,
my favorite.
Me too.
Yeah. Except for when she like, shows up in, like, a bubble, and she's like, oh, that's naughty, or something like that.
Yeah,
what the hell was that?
Yeah, you're right. Like, they turn it into something kind of sexual. It's like,
yeah.
But I think that's kind of, like, the iconic... I feel like that's the iconic scene of this movie, is, like, this piano, like, chopping up a woman. And all the colors go crazy in that scene. Like, it just sort of, like, flashes colors. It's like, oh. Like, this movie is really oversaturated. I like a lot of what he does with the colors. Like, when they're on the train, and all of a sudden the backgrounds all become, like, painted backgrounds.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like... You feel like you're in an after-school special. And I really like the dancing skeleton also, who just sort of, like, dances in the background and no one notices that he's alive.
There were some smaller scenes where it kind of looked like it was going to be a musical. Did you notice that?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, please, God, do it. Do it. But it never happened.
Man, someone should stage a Broadway musical version of House. Boom. I solved it. Awesome. Screw Spider-Man. See this. I also really enjoyed how even though almost the entire film takes place in the house, but one of my favorite, like, characters is who we meet at the beginning, and we see her a little bit throughout, is the mother.
The stepmom?
The stepmom, yeah. Because, like, I guess I didn't really say it before, but the whole sort of, like, crux of the story is that Gorgeous, who's kind of the main girl, the reason she's at the house is it's her aunt's house. And she, it's just her and her father. Her mom died when she was little. And her dad decides he wants to remarry. And she gets so mad at this that she decides to spend the summer with her aunt and try and sort of, like, reconnect with her mother in a way, because it was her mother's sister. So the woman who's going to be the stepmom is great, because for some reason, no matter what she's doing, there's a fan on her, and
even inside,
yeah, inside, yeah. Outside, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
She's wearing gauzy white clothing, and there's a very just sort of romantic wind just sort of blowing about, and there's a soft light. And it's like she's this angelic figure, and she sort of floats when she wants. And I don't know why, but it gets me every time. I find that so funny. And it's another thing that, like, no one makes mention of. It's just the way it is for some reason with this character. And they flash to her a couple times throughout the film, and she's not really important to the story, but I think she is one of the funniest things about it. I didn't mention that. I also like the teacher with the mutton chops. I don't remember his name. Do you?
Mr. Togo?
Yeah. Wow. Awesome. Who someone has a crush on.
I'm sorry. It's fantasy, right?
I think it is fantasy.
Yeah.
But I like how sort of periodically you'll just get him, like, in the car on the way to the house, and he's, like, in a traffic jam, and he's, like, eating noodles. He's just sort of hanging out, having a fun time. And then you'll flash back to the house, and a bunch of, like, young girls are being murdered. And then you flash back to him, and he's, like, laughing. And obviously the banana thing is pretty cool.
Yeah, like, that was so weird, though.
What was up with that?
He just magically becomes
just
bananas.
Like, they randomly started talking about bananas. There was no context of it. They're just like, bananas! And then he's bananas.
Literally.
Literally, guys.
I wonder if that's some of the, like the script is definitely sort of, I almost feel like parts were missing, or, you know, there are transitions that weren't happening, or parts were cut. The whole story was actually inspired by the, quote, eccentric musings of his, like, 11-year-old daughter, or, like, 7-year-old daughter. 11-year-old daughter. So
I think that sort of accounts for it being pretty scattered. You know, like, maybe she had a bunch of ideas and was talking to her dad about it, and he was like, okay, I'm going to take all of these and somehow make a movie. But, yeah, I don't know, because there are a lot of things in the script that are sort of, like, referenced or mentioned, and you're like, wait, what was that? Because they just sort of, like, go on to the next scene without really thinking about it, and it doesn't really have any continuity.
I was reading the Wikipedia entry for the movie, and it says that the production company wanted a film like Jaws, because this was around the time that Jaws came out.
Yeah.
And so this was supposed to be a similar script to Jaws.
Yeah, that actually is true. Like, he was hired by the studio to make, yeah, exactly, like a Japanese, because the thing was American films were doing better in Japan than Japanese films at the time. In the 70s, like, there were no, like, at-home hits.
Yeah.
So they were like, let's make a Japanese version of this. And that's why, like, yeah, like, it was shown as a double bill. I think the other movie it was shown with was this, like, oh, it was, like, a teen romance with, you know, like a some sort of pop star or something was the other movie. And the way it was advertised was, like, I think the slogan was, see how seven beauties were eaten alive or something like that. Like, it was definitely, I don't think anyone expected it to be as completely inventive and strange and original as it is. Like, you know, whether or not you like it, you have to admit, you've not seen a movie like this, I think. Unless you're awesome and have somehow found another movie like House. But, yeah, I know, I think that's funny thinking about it, like, being, like watch Jaws and then watch House. I can't even imagine that, putting those two next to each other.
That's a really bizarre double bill.
Yeah. Do you guys want to talk about Kung Fu? Just, you know, every time I think about her as a character, she's just so much better than the other characters. We keep mentioning her, but we're not really talking about it. So Kung Fu, like all the other girls, that's her nickname, so it's her key attribute. And she's maybe the only person who's, I don't want to say that, because fantasy is knowing what's going on, but she does do stuff to
she's
make
only
sure.
She's like competent.
Yeah, she's the one who can, like, when the logs are attacking her, she's able to kind of strike them down. Prof is a little bit competent, too, but only near the end, because she doesn't believe that the house is haunted for the longest time. Mm-hmm. But I think it's Prof who works out that it's the cat that's kind of controlling things.
Yeah.
Or whatever, however it works. It doesn't matter, because this movie doesn't make sense. But Kung Fu scenes are awesome.
Isn't Prof reading a diary or something?
Yeah, she's reading the aunt's diary, and that's how they know that the aunt died several years ago.
Spoiler alert.
Okay,
we already talked about death.
That was the biggest spoiler ever, okay?
That is true. You definitely don't go into this for the story, so I was totally kidding.
But yeah, you're right, it is you learn the aunt's history, and how, like, yeah, like, her fiancé left her and all that. But yeah, no, I agree. I'm sorry that I didn't talk more about Kung Fu. She is amazing. And she sort of has a theme song. Like, I feel like whenever she starts fighting, it's like, do-do-do-do-do, like this little song that plays.
Oh, yeah. Well, aren't they, they're like, well, Kung Fu movies are really popular right now. No one wants to go see a horror movie. They say something like that somewhere in the script, like early on.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, and that is sort of that music that would go with karate movies.
I just like the fact that when she fights, she, like, loses her pants.
And then she doesn't bother getting them back. She just grabs it out of the air and is running around like that for the rest of the movie.
She's good. She's good.
Mobility. It's probably hot anyway.
That's true. It's summer.
And she's just hanging around with the girls. Just FYI, guys. This is what ladies do. Run around on everywhere. I kick in. That's what it's like when you're not around. Okay, Kung Fu. House is awesome. I love this movie. Are those all the topics? I guess here's the question. Like, I would recommend this to anyone, but not, I guess I wouldn't recommend it to everyone, because I think it's amazing, and I think a lot of people would get so much enjoyment out of it, even if it's not your kind of movie. Like, it's just so fun and weird, you know? Like, you're never bored, as Allison said. But at the same time, I can see people being like, this is too strange for me. I'm not sure if I can deal with it, because it doesn't make any sense. Would you guys recommend it to people?
I think I'd recommend it to people if it was in a group setting. But I'm not going to go up to my mom and go, hey,
watch this.
This is not a mom movie.
No.
What about you, Allison?
Yeah, I think maybe if I tried handing the DVD to someone and saying, oh, you should watch this, they probably either wouldn't watch it or they wouldn't get it while they were watching it. But as a group thing, it would be so funny and so weird, and no one would, like, go up and turn it off when it got, like, too bizarre. So, yeah, this is, like, the number one group movie. I kind of just want to buy the DVD now and get, like, as many people as I can crammed into a little room to watch it. This is awesome. I should do this.
Do it.
I'm going to do this. This is my plan in the future.
Yeah, okay, cool. I definitely agree with both of you. I think it is a great group movie, especially as an introduction to the film. And like I said, if anyone can see it in a theater, I don't know, like, how much it's screening. All I know is that it definitely just played at, like, my the local repertory theater, which is the one that screened it way back in, like, May. I think they just screened it again, like, this week or last week, so I assume other theaters are kind of getting it. I don't know.
Yeah, here it's playing, I think it played last month, and it played a lot in September and October.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's when the Criterion came out, so that makes sense. Mm-hmm. It was probably, like, celebrating this awesome movie. Because, yeah, it's too bad it hasn't been available in America until just now, you know? It's kind of weird to think about. But it definitely has developed somewhat of a following, I think. Anyone who could get it would get it.
Did you guys notice that the Criterion Collection really kind of marketed this movie a bit differently than they do their others? Because it feels like for everything else, they just kind of, they put the announcement out 4 months ahead of time or whatever. And for House, you get, there were stickers and t-shirts and everything.
And, yeah, I actually and have postcards. A House t-shirt. I got
yeah.
it
It's just...
No, you're right. And posters and stuff.
Yeah, and it's just, it's so weird. Like, I've never seen them do that before.
I guess I didn't think about that, because I don't really follow Criterion that much. But yeah, you're right. I mean, maybe because it is something that has developed this cult following, and, you know, it's kind of cool that it's finally available. And so I don't know how many movies like that they release. They release movies that aren't available, but do they release movies that have, have built up a cult following in the U.S.?
I don't think they do. Like, they have Carnival of Souls, and that's maybe, that and House is maybe it. Because they're usually about the really, like, high-end but hard-to-get sort of Ozu films or whatever.
Right. Yeah, I mean, good for them, obviously. It's cool they did that. And maybe they'll start doing that with more movies after this. I don't know. I mean, it's tough because I feel like so many Criterion movies, they aren't, like, fun, you know? No, I mean, no offense, Criterion, but it's true. Like, you don't really go to Criterion for, like, you know, a wacky midnight feature. It's like, you go to it for your, like, Bergman or something.
Yeah.
So that might be part of it, too, is that it's... I mean, they release comedies. I'm not saying it's... The only thing they do is like stodgy foreign movies, but I feel like it's more rare.
So originally when we were going to do this, our group topic movie was going to be The Room. And then when we switched it to House, I decided to take The Room for my recommendation because it really is one of those so bad it's good movies. It's a drama created by Tommy Wiseau?
I think it's Wiseau.
Yeah. Who's just this strange European man with a lot of stringy black hair who, the plot is his future wife is deciding to cheat on him with his best friend, but it's kind of like House, the plot doesn't really matter. Well, more or less. Because, I mean, might as well get a football and toss it around.
Might as well have, like, a drug deal on the roof and then not talk about it for the rest of the
day. Might as well have a party with that guy who... We don't know who he is, but he's somehow joining in the conversation, knows what's going on in the plot.
Actually, that's because the other actor left the production, so it was supposed to be the original friend, like the psychiatrist.
Yeah, the psychiatrist, but it's just funny to watch because it's like, where did this guy come from?
It's so funny.
And just the line delivery and the picture of the spoon, and I wish I had seen this as they're showing it now as like Rocky Horror Picture in some cities, and I wish I'd seen it like that instead of just watching it with this dumbfounded look on my face by myself, because oh my god, this movie needs other people. This movie needs Mystery Science Theater, and luckily, I think there's a Riff Tracks, right?
I was about to say, did you see the Riff Tracks? I actually watched that the other day.
I watched the clips that they put on YouTube of it.
It's pretty funny. Whenever there's a sex scene, they sort of like just do a skit and like talk over it.
These are the worst sex scenes I've ever seen. And then there's some crappy pop jazz song playing with them. But this movie is so quotable. Lisa, take your part.
I haven't seen it with a at a theater screening either, but I can see it being pretty fun. I think people dress up and stuff
like Rocky Horror,
like Lisa,
yeah,
or Tommy Wiseau. Yeah, have you seen it, Sasha?
I've watched it once, but it was kind of at like a group screening party, so no one was paying attention really. And one of my friends was incredibly drunk, and the whole time he's like, "Doesn't Claudette have cancer?" And he's just like, "What's that?" Like, I thought Claudette had cancer.
She does.
But like, apparently no one talks about it, and I'm just.
All anyone in this movie ever says to one another is, "Don't worry about it."
It's like, oh, fine. So basically, the whole movie, I'm laughing at my friend and not paying attention to the movie. So I need to watch it again.
And Allison, while I definitely respect your decision to recommend it, and it is really, really bad. Oddly enough, I don't know, maybe it was just built up too much. Like, it's not one of my favorites, so bad it's good. I think that Lisa's, like, too mean. Like, it's not really funny to me. Like, she's just a bitch for no reason. And
That's why I think it's funny.
Yeah, like, I think it's funny to a point, but then it's a little bit, I don't know, like, it makes it a little bit less fun to me for some reason, because I feel as if Tommy Wiseau is writing this movie as, like, you know, fuck him to some ex-girlfriend. You know, because there's so much animosity there. And then it also, I think it drags a little bit at parts. It's a really bad movie. Of course, the script is not, like, paced well. But I don't know. I think personally, maybe it's because I really like so bad they're good movies, but I usually might go for more of, like, you know, like a cheesy action movie or like a really bad sci-fi movie as opposed to like a drama.
Yeah. Well, I had a runner up that, but I saw The Room and I'm like, ugh, I have to talk about this.
Oh, yeah,
that
no.
That movie's so
definitely
weird.
Need to talk about it. I'm not at all putting you down.
Oh,
I'm
no,
just
no.
I found it sort of interesting because I feel like it's a lot of people's favorite, like, bad movie. And I was like, oh, I definitely see why people like it. But I'm not going to, like, I don't really feel the need to watch it over and over again, I guess.
Right. Well, I don't know. I don't watch a lot of the so bad they're good movies to begin with, and then this one's starting to get, like, so much talked up.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I just think going to one of those screenings where there's going to be spoons thrown in the air or whatever, that sounds fun. And it's starting to, it just, yeah, I can't place it. Plus, it's just so weird. It's weird not the same way House is weird, but it's weird in, like, no one knows what's going on.
I feel like it's weird in, like, a train wreck kind of way.
Yeah, that's the correct description. Anyway, Alex, you want to give your recommendation?
Sure, yeah. Mine is actually one that I saw in a theater at a, there was a Grindhouse series at the, again, the same repertory theater, the Brattle, if you're in the Boston area, support the Brattle. And it's called Lady Terminator, and it's as awesome as it sounds from the title. Have you guys seen it?
No, I want you so badly.
Okay. Allison?
No, I haven't.
All right, well then, this is for you. it's really cool. It's basically an Indonesian ripoff of The Terminator in the movie. You know, it's from 1988. A great year. And, well, I was born in 1988.
Yeah, I was too.
I know. But yeah, so it's Indonesian. It's an Indonesian movie, but it's in English. So a lot of it is dubbed, and then there are two, like, American actors in it. Like, the two Americans who were hanging out in Indonesia at the time were found and were put in the movie. Because none of them are actors. And so the main lady is, she's also the makeup artist for the film. But she plays an anthropology student researching local folklore.
and she's trying to find the castle of the South Sea Queen, which is an actual, like, myth. It's an actual, like, Indonesian thing, who was a sorceress who was always having sex with people, and, like, she was beaten by one of her lovers, and so she swore to take out her revenge on the great-granddaughter of this lover who, like, defeated her. So now Tanya, the anthropology student, is researching her, and she, like, swims in her very skimpy bikini to this underwater dwelling, which is where the South Sea Queen used to live. And she very quickly becomes, like, tied to a bed, and a snake crawls into her vagina, and she becomes possessed by the Sea Queen. Actually, this is actually what happens. And she gets certain superpowers. Mainly, she has the power to have sex with someone and destroy their penis at the same time. It's pretty awesome. This is what happens. And she has, like super strength, and she can't be killed. And she wants to kill everyone. She wants to murder everyone. She somehow picks up some leather duds, as it were, and a machine gun, and becomes Lady Terminator. So her mission is to hunt down the great-granddaughter of the ex-lover, who is a, like, pop singer. She's being defended by an American cop who's, like, hanging out there. And so it's just basically this woman with big hair, machine gun, who doesn't really talk, and a nice leather jacket, running around, having sex with a lot of people and killing them through penis mutilation, showing her boobs a lot. We see a lot of this lady's boobs. Having a machine gun and just, like, destroying the place. And then a bunch of people trying to stop. It's amazing. It's, like, the dubbing's awful. The dialogue is hilarious. It has the best tagline ever. She mates, then she terminates. Right? I know. There's this great character who's like, he's like an Indonesian guy, but he's playing like an American. And he's like a friend of the American cop who like flies over to Indonesia in like a few minutes. And he has like long blonde hair, like dyed blonde hair. And he looks like Spicoli from Fast Times. And he talks with, like, a surfer accent, and, like, nothing he says makes any sense. It's, like, weird, like, mangled American slang. It's so funny. But, yeah, it's awesome. It's, like, it's really violent. There's a lot of nudity. It doesn't make a lot of sense, and it's just, like, it's so, so cheesy. And the action sequences are actually pretty decent. So I highly recommend it for anyone in the world, no matter who you are. See you later, Terminator.
Alex, have you seen Robo Geisha?
I haven't seen it yet. I really want to. We have it. I haven't watched it yet.
Okay,
I've seen The Machine Girl, which is the same people, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Because I remember you saw it at Twin After Dark, right?
Yeah, I did. And Lady Terminator kind of reminds me of the same kind of movie as Robo Geisha. And Robo Geisha was, oh my god, it was so bad. The things that happened in that movie. It's just like different weapons come out of different parts of this woman's body.
And I saw the trailer. It looks pretty awesome.
Yeah. The trailer is pretty much the entire movie. Okay, so my recommendation for So Bad It's Good is Ricky O, The Story of Ricky. Have either of you seen it?
No.
No? Okay. So it's a movie from Hong Kong, and I think it's from 90 or 91. I didn't actually look this up. I haven't seen the movie in maybe a couple months. Edgar Wright was in town for The Right Stuff 2, and this was playing as a double bill with a movie that I cannot remember. Oh my god, I'm terrible at podcasting.
Didn't you show like Flash Gordon? Or was that a different
movie? No, it was Flash Gordon, you're right. Oh my god.
You're welcome.
Thank you. So it was Flash Gordon, but I didn't show up for Flash Gordon. That's why. Oh,
okay. That's a great movie,
though. I'm terrible. So Ricky O is basically over-the-top gore for the entire movie. Every single time that somebody dies, the whole screen is saturated in red. It's based on a manga and it's an anime adaptation. And the plot is in the future of 2001. All the government institutions have been privatized, and it's become a corrupt society. And Ricky O, he's a music student who has
very good martial art talent for music students. And he's sentenced to serve 10 years in prison for manslaughtering this man. I think it's because he was indirectly responsible for his girlfriend's death or something stupid. I don't even remember. It's not important. So basically, the story is Riccio in the jail being incredibly talented at martial arts and fighting a group of thugs in the jail who are called the Gang of Four. And
like the band.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, they're not that talented, but, you know, it gives Riccio an opportunity to kill people and for the screen to go red. That's all that matters. And also there's the warden who's controlling the whole operation, and he's obsessed with porn. Just every single scene where someone dies, red screen, over the top gore, and there's even like strangling with intestines, and Riccio, his arm opens up and his tendons all come out of his arm, and he ties them back together with his teeth and his fingers. Oh. It's just like, it's hilarious.
Oh my god.
It's so good. There's so much gore, and the whole movie is, oh my god, the prison's corrupt. Oh my god, the warden's obsessed with porn. Let's kill people. This entire movie. And it's just so bad. But I looked it up on Rotten Tomatoes, and it has like a 90% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes.
What?
That's
like,
long.
Enough people enjoy it, the so bad it's good kind of a thing, they'll give it a high, like, I'll give high ratings to movies that I find entertaining, even if it's a bad movie, you know.
But if you can get a hold of it, you should definitely watch it with a group. Maybe it's a double feature with The Room. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Maybe they have a quadruple feature of all the movies we talked about.
Wow, that would take like a day.
The best day ever. Anyway, yeah, sorry. Riccio sounds awesome, Sasha.
Sorry, I'm like falling asleep. I have made like a little bed on the couch, and I'm just like laying down talking about Riccio. This is how you podcast, everybody.
Yeah, FYI, people, we woke up really early to do this, so if you sound a little out of it, please be forgiving.
And by really early, we mean like 10 o'clock.
I woke up at 8! Which is early! Well, when you don't have to, like, if you don't have a job you have to wake up early for, it's like, we're not used to it. Like, I almost, you know, I usually work at night, so. But yeah, okay, I guess is that done? Is that it for our recommendations?
I think that's it. Well, thanks, ladies. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, people who make bad movies.
We love you very, 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 very much.
Very much.
You got it.
If you want to send in some feedback, you can email us at somecastithot@gmail.com. And our next theme is going to be movies that pass the Bechdel test.